This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For Inside Carolina, I'm Taylor Viplis, and you're listening to this podcast, which is a part of the Inside Carolina Podcast Network. So first off, thank you for being here. If you haven't already, be sure you subscribe or follow Inside Carolina wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube so you never miss out on any of the content the team at IC puts out. It helps us out a ton, and it hardly takes any time. Speaking of support, we want to support the people that support us. So that's why I've got to remind everybody about Jimmy's Famous Seafood. The reason they wanted to sponsor this podcast is simple. They're owned and operated by Carolina fans. So not only do you get great seafood at a great price, but you're also supporting one of your own. It's a true win-win. For everybody wondering, my go-to order is the Famous Gift Box, where you get two massive crab cakes, two kinds of crab soup, and a half pint of crab dip. Visit them online at jimmysfamousseafood.com. And at checkout, use the promo code hashtag GDTBATH for free two-day shipping. That's promo code hashtag GDTBATH. All right, today we have a fellow Carolina football letterman in the house who's now a college football analyst for Stadium, Michael Felder, in the building. Michael, this is a collaboration that's been long overdue. I heard on The Right Time with Bomani Jones that you just bought a new house. So how's everything with you as you get ready for what has to be the busiest time of the year?
I mean, I'm focused on the football. My wife's focused on the house. So I let her handle that and I handle this. It's one of those things where, you know, like we got new appliances coming in. We got a consult appointment for the new countertops. But the reality of it is, we got it. We don't have to move, which is important. And goodness, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, by the way, to everyone that's part of the Carolina football family, thoughts and prayers to Fred Sparkman's family who passed away most recently. So yeah, I didn't mean to start a show on a joke and then go to a bad note, but Fred Sparkman passed away, for those of you that didn't know. So I wanted to put that out there because I think more people are going to hear about this than are kind of scrolling the internet.
For a little background into how me and Michael became close, when I was a senior in college in 2016, I reached out looking for help on, you know, how I could turn sports broadcasting into a career. And he was always quick on how to give me tips or giving me advice or feedback. So if you like listening to anything I do on Inside Carolina, know that I wouldn't be here today without somebody like Michael Felder. So big salute to you always. Do you remember those early days?
Yeah, man, I remember those, man. Listen, we talked a lot, and it was always my whole goal is to give back, right? Like, I wouldn't be here if somebody didn't help me up either. So I just want to give back. I'm not the guy that gets in the club and closes the door, right? I'm the guy that I want to get in the club, leave that door cracked a little bit. Let's go, baby.
Let's bring everybody. Everybody's coming with us. It's a great follow on Twitter. In the bleachers, but especially on Saturdays with college football. Felder, can you break down your college football weekly viewing experience to the listeners? Because you're normally tweeting from that first noonish kickoff time from the East Coast perspective up until, you know, I'm scrolling Twitter late at night watching that late night Hawaii action.
Be real. You're scrolling Twitter on Sunday morning when you wake up.
No, I'm a late night Hawaii watcher. Like,
okay,
those are the games. Like, if I have a bad couple of bets, you know, Hawaii game is the game where I'm trying to win it back before the NFL action Sunday. So I just see your tweets that correspond with that game too.
Yeah, no, I'm in Chicago now, so I kick it off 11 o'clock in the morning, and I ride all the way until 2:30, and that's the Hawaii game that we're talking about, right? It starts midnight Eastern, starts 11 o'clock my time, and they throw the ball a ton. Don't matter who's coaching them, they throw the ball a ton. So, you know, there's a lot of stops in play. And I tweet through it, man. Like, I love football. Like, that's a thing that it was really frustrating having people be like, you don't even like the sport that you cover. And I was like, oh, no, I actually like the sport. I don't care about the band. I don't care about, I hardly care about rivalries. I don't care about, I like the X's and O's, the little bit that goes into football to make football great. And I care about what happens between the chalk, as we say. And to get to watch that, I don't care if it's Virginia taking on UNC or it's Notre Dame going to play when they played, Clemson, when they played Pitt a couple years ago, and Pitt completely changed their offense and mesmerized Clemson and was able to pull off the upset. I don't care if it's DJ Uiagalelei taking on Notre Dame, or I don't care if it's Mason Fine. You guys don't know who Mason Fine is, quarterback for North Texas. I loved Mason Fine and Jalen Durden and all the rest of those guys that were able to make those plays. I just like what happens between the white, and it's something I get. They finally gave me a chance to do a podcast called Tape Don't Lie, where I get to talk about just the chalk stuff. Like, and I got to get you on, Taylor. I got to get you on to talk about whether it's whatever you feel the most comfortable about, but I want to talk wide receiver releases or wide receiver alignments. But I did 25 minutes with Roddy Jones from the ACC Network, where we only talked about inside zone aiming points from a running back standpoint. Like, that's the part of football that I like.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool. And obviously, to circle back, you and I have been in contact and been friends and talked the whole deal for a long time. And is it almost 5 years now?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And the biggest thing that I always told you was be yourself, right? Because it's really hard to be somebody else, and getting to be myself is something that makes me really excited.
Now, I brought you on here today to talk about this upcoming Carolina football season, where the hype around the Tar Heels is reaching that 2010, maybe even levels that we've never even seen before when you have the North Carolina LSU game. But the hype is off the charts, where everybody starts with this UNC team. It's the quarterback, Sam Howell, where Carolina has arguably one of the best players in the nation at the most important position in the sport. What is it, in your opinion, that has made Howell this elite quarterback at this level seemingly from day one?
Man, I think that, like, going back to Sam Howell, for me, as someone who does sports on a national level, him kind of dissing Florida State, I mean, that's the start, right? That's the start of his arc going into college. Everyone knew he was good, and everyone just assumed he would go to Florida State. And then Florida State has their ups and downs. They have their problems. Now he's at UNC. And he comes in, and he plays well. Fire strong. I mean, this is a guy, I like to call him like a thick body all-star, right? Am I wrong?
No.
Like, him and Baker Mayfield is the guy that I usually compare him to.
The same type of build, yeah. Same type of build, same type of quiet swagger.
Yeah, but they got swag. And you know they got swag because those wide receivers respect him. And so watching him come out and play and throw and do his thing, and he can make every single throw that you need somebody to make. So he's deservedly kind of sitting in the catbird seat. I think that's really cool to watch because – for all the success that North Carolina has had on different levels in terms of football, a quarterback that we expect to get picked in the first round has not been one of them for the most part.
Yeah.
And so that's huge. And it also speaks to, he is the bell cow for Mack Brown and for Mack Brown returning to UNC. And then you throw in Phil Longo, and you throw in Bateman, and you throw in all these extra pieces to the puzzle. But Sam Howell kind of kicked off that entire thought process or confidence or, oh, maybe this is going to be a game-changing move. And I'll admit, I didn't know if Mack was going to work at UNC for a second time. As someone who grew up with Mack the first time, and I was like, oh, yeah, he was great at that. But then I saw Texas, and I don't know if this is going to go well. But then guess what? It did, and it is. And a lot of that has to do with Sam Howell. He's a way better recruiter than I ever was. He works hard. He talks to people. He's interested in other people, which is something I never was. But he works really – he's working on his craft. And I'm not going to sit – I think that Trevor Lawrence is a remarkably special talent. I mean, you don't find giants that are, you know, a guy that's 6'6", that can do what Trevor Lawrence does. But what I do see between Trevor and Sam Howell, I do see this control. And I think control is important. I don't think most people think about control when they think about the offense. But even in the second year, we saw Sam get more control of the offense. And there were a lot less check with me's, a lot less looking to the sideline, and a lot less not knowing what to do. And I think that control is what helps you get ready for not just a really good year three, it helps you get ready for a really good career at the next level.
Yeah, and I think the craziest thing with somebody like Sam Howell is that when you talk with people, he still has like so much room left to reach his full potential as a quarterback while already being one of the best, if not the best quarterback in school history. Where do you see him having the most room for growth in his overall game?
Well, there's a couple things. One, if I'm him, I am worried going into this season because you don't have Javonte back there.
Yeah.
He's one of the best guys in pass pro that we've ever seen.
Mm.
So I think for him, it's going to be recognizing that you have to do more. And so the room for growth for me is probably decision-making. I don't think physically we're going to see a ton change, which I think that does kind of differentiate him from Trevor Lawrence, who didn't really run year one, ran a little more year two, ran more year three. I think for Sam, we're going to see him still make the smart run decisions that he made. But I think him understanding how to get people into space to protect so that he can push the ball vertically is going to be the biggest growth here, because it is a team that still has to figure out, who are our running backs? What do our running backs look like? What's the easiest way for me to create space in the run game? Because football's a game of schedule. And you know this as well as I do, right? Like, if we can get first and 10 to second and five, then we can get to third and two. And third and two is better than third and seven. Yeah. And then if we can get to third and two, now we have a run, pass, go, and I can make that decision myself. And I think managing the first two downs, and maybe this is something that people don't think about football or think about football in this way, but managing those first two downs are going to be the most important part of Sam Howell's growth.
For Carolina, this is a team where their confidence extends, you know, well beyond Sam Howell right now, since it's a team that they're returning 21 of 22 starters from its Orange Bowl appearance, where they went toe-to-toe with a team like Texas A&M. Outside of Howell, what would you say this team's greatest strength is?
Bo Corrales is back, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, man. But you know what? Nah, I'm defaulting to the Rude Boys, baby.
Big time Rude Boys.
I'm defaulting to the Rude Boys. Between Grimes, Morrison, you throw in Conley, I think that the Rude Boys are who I'm defaulting to. What's his name? Kyler McMichael.
Yeah, the Clemson transfer.
Yeah, like I think he fits, and I just think that I'm defaulting to the Rude Boys. Now the question becomes, how can the two Fox kids help out?
Mm.
Because you got to get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
You have to get to the quarterback. But I think the Rude Boys, and obviously shout out to Dre Bly, shout out to anyone that's played in that secondary. Like, I think the Rude Boys are the strongest part of this football team, man. Am I wrong?
Defensively, I would say, yeah, that was one of the questions I was going to bring up with you, is that, you know, you were a cornerback at Carolina. You were a Rude Boy. You know what it takes and like what they're expecting in that room. And since he's been back at UNC, Dre has kind of taken that position from, quite frankly, an absolute liability in coverage and in tackling, to now they're the strength of the defense, where you have a guy like Tony Grimes in his high school senior year balling out at the ACC level. You have a guy like Storm Duck, who at times looked like he was the best corner in the conference before he got hurt. You have a guy like Kyler Michael, who's your three, your two, maybe third cornerback, but he could start at a lot of ACC teams. And for somebody like Dre, who this is his first job, in the college level to have this team, have this position group as strong as it is going into year three. Like, what he's doing is unbelievable. What the only other strength I could think of is that, you know, this team has a lot more continuity than a lot of other teams where you're going into year three with Jay Bateman. You're going into year three with Phil Longo. You're going into year three with the same five on the offensive line. And I think the offensive line, they've had their ups and downs the past 2 years, but, and I don't think they get the credit they necessarily deserve, because you look at somebody like Javonte Williams and you look at Michael Carter, and they're making a ton of people miss, and a lot of their yards are coming from them making people miss. But I don't think you have 2,000 yard rushers with an average or below average offensive line. So for me, I would either say it's the continuity that you get with the coordinators, or it is the defensive backs.
Yeah, no, I think continuity is critical. And I know Dre, awesome. Dre is, for me, my lifetime, like, because I'm a little Deion young. I'm not Deion. I'm not old. I'm old. I'm not Deion old. But Dre was the best defensive back. Dre and Charles Woodson. It's like Woodson one, Dre two, right? Mm. And so that's me growing up. But I also got to give some credit to Bateman. And I think Bateman, what he did, what he was able to do, remember, he was at Army, right?
Yeah.
And so he's at Army. And so he doesn't have Dre Blythes or Deion Sanderses or Charles Woodsons or Darrell Revises. And he did something that was very similar to Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, Jim Leonard at Wisconsin, where he took guys and he was like, here's what we're focusing in on. And so, yes, I think Dre is the highlight of it, but I think Bateman is the base of it. And I think the base is more important, because you can't build that. You can't build the building up without that base. And Bateman is the base. And it's about tackling, which you mentioned this, right? They got way better at tackling.
Yeah.
Tackling is important. Rallying to the football. One of the things that I have always loved about football is you can see effort on film, right? Mm-hmm. And I know you're an offensive guy, but when I think about it, I look at how many hats are in the frame. And UNC, going from Fedora to Mac with Bateman, they had more hats in frame than they had before. And that's a humongous thing. More hats in frame. And it doesn't matter if they go to the NFL like Chaz Surratt. It doesn't matter if they don't go to the next level. But the reality of it is you have guys rallying to the football. You got 11 players on defense. If any time you can get 11 hats in the frame, that means you're doing your job. Yeah. Because everybody's paying attention. Defense works in sync. And I think that is a big Bateman thing. I think that the swag, some of that swag and some of that, some of the risk-taking, quite honestly, that does come from Dre. But I think Bateman is a guy that he truly, because he was at Army, because he was at a school that didn't have, we might have one guy that goes to the NFL.
Yeah.
But they built a culture, and he's building it at UNC as well, a culture of guys who all work really hard so that we have 11 hats to the ball every time. I kind of equate it to, obviously we talked about it with Army, but I also equate it to seeing the difference between Oklahoma under Grinch versus pre-Grinch. And with Grinch, Oklahoma, they get more hats to the ball. And that was a noticeable difference in watching them play. And with UNC, it was the same thing. And listen, they weren't always doing the right thing, but if you make mistakes fast, that's a better mistake than paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, just frozen stuff.
Exactly. and we saw it a couple times, right? We saw Chaz Surratt come down in a blitz in blitz packages and he got blown up. He got stoned a couple times. But guess what? That's a mistake I can take versus I don't know what I'm doing. Should I go or should I not go? I don't know if I'm going to go. Those are two completely different types of mistakes. And him flashing in front of a quarterback, even if he gets stoned, that's still better because that quarterback does have to move off his point. Him moving off that point means that your defensive back gets a throw that's coming out a lot quicker, a little hotter than if you're standing there and you take a false step and you back up and then you decide, I don't know, I guess maybe I'm going to rush. And so there is this understanding, and that's where, I guess, when you mentioned continuity, that's where that comes into play, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
These guys are going to know what they're supposed to do, and knowing what you're supposed to do, whether it's what, is it Gimmel? And obviously I mentioned the Fox, Miles Murphy being able to do stuff. Like, those are important parts of things, and that's going to help the back end. And then Grimes is actually a college kid now, right?
He's going into his true freshman season.
And I like Storm Duck. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah. And then I also think, like, kind of going to the point you were making overall, like, when you watch them in the Texas A&M game, they had a little bit of swagger to them defensively. Mm-hmm. They get gassed. They just can't finish plays defensively, which is a huge difference when you look at, like, the 2014 team against ECU, when ECU is putting up 70 points on the Tar Heels in Greenville, where it's like, these guys have no idea what they're supposed to be doing right now, compared to Carolina knowing what they're supposed to do, just not having the bodies to do it against Texas A&M to close out that game. And the other point I wanted to make about Dre Bly is, like, a lot of times people are like, what took so long? And the one counter I have heard, which kind of goes hand in hand with what you were saying, it's like, Jay Bateman was the perfect defensive coordinator for a first-time coach like Dre Bly, where Dre can just be himself, tell the guys what he knows, and then you know somebody like Jay Bateman is going to cover for you when you're looking at the entire defense. So from a schematic standpoint, what do you think the ideal Jay Bateman defense looks like when he has the talent and he has the depth to do what he's trying to do?
Man, I'm still, because it's, what is it, like a 3-3-5 package?
Yeah.
And it's a 3-3-5 package, but it's a 3-3-5 where you have the overhang guy. So it's really, it's a 4-3. It's a 4-3 package with a, or a 4-2-5, really, because you put a linebacker up on the line. And that's, who is that? Is that Tom and Fox? Is that right?
Yeah.
He's usually at the line of scrimmage. And so when I think about it, it's a 4-2-5, even though you have somebody standing up on the edge. And I think that the star or the nickel or whatever you want to call him, that guy is your wild card. Mm-hmm. And with Bateman, he plays a small guy there, right? They've rotated it this year.
It's Chapman now. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not Duck. It's Chapman. And so you play a smaller guy there. I think about the reason I bring this all up to get into it is when I see other 4-2-5s, I think about, like, Alabama. And they have played famously guys like Landon Collins, who's a bigger guy, and Vinny Sunseri, who's a bigger guy. And they've played in that spot. I think about TCU, who uses that 3 safety rotation to play it. And with Bateman, he opts for that speed, because speed is a difference maker. And obviously it's a thing we saw him do at Army. It's a thing that he's working on now. And the speed is, you just, I don't know if anybody listening to this knows who Bookie Radley Hiles is, but Bookie played at Oklahoma and is now, I believe, at Washington. But you have to have tough speed. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you gotta ask a guy to really get in his bag and recognize that I'm smaller, but I'm going for it, which does allow you to blow plays up. And I don't know, and I honestly, I'll be honest, I haven't studied Bateman as much as I've looked at guys, whether it's Grinch or Saban or Kirby Smart or whoever, but it looks like they play a lot more of a spill defense to make everything run wide.
Yeah.
So if you spill things and push things wide, that speed helps you spill, and if you can spill, now you have linebackers that can go track things down. So I think that's interesting. If you want to play fill or that force or hammer defense and keep things on the inside, which was a very Butch Davis thing. Butch Davis funneled everything to those two linebackers to the interior. This feels like more of a spill where the linebackers are fast and they can get wide. And then you're obviously, your defensive line is making plays as well. So we'll see what happens. I just am very, I was talking to a guy, Jordan Reed, who played at North Carolina Central. And he said that the hardest defense for a lot of coaches to figure out is a 3-3-5. Because you clog up in the middle, everything bounces, everything has to go a little bit wide. But if you have these fast guys coming in from the sides, now you got a problem. I think we see the same thing with Iowa State, how they clog up the middle, and somehow Iowa State runs like a 2-4. I'm trying to do the math, 2-4-5, and they just like clog up the middle. You have to bounce, and then they make the tackle. So I think that's the goal, and I think it can work.
Yeah, and especially when you're spilling, I know the staff is super high on Eugene Asante, who's replacing Chad Surratt this year. So we'll see if he – I thought he had his moments in the Orange Bowl. Like, there was times where you could tell he – the game was moving really fast for him, but he was moving – just as fast trying to make those plays, running sideline to sideline. And I think the staff is really high on his potential this year. But, you know, we talked about the positives.
Well, it's better. It's better. If a guy can't hit a hole, if someone can't hit someone in the A-gap's an immediate play.
Yeah.
But if you can force them out to the C-gap, now you got more bodies moving that way. And I think that's a really good philosophy.
Yeah. But if we're flipping it, we talked about the strengths earlier. Where would you say your biggest question marks or concerns are for this team heading into the 2021 season?
Oh, man. Well, let me ask you. Is what is it, Ty Chandler, Tennessee kid?
Yeah.
Is that going to be – that's the running back position?
Yeah, he's gonna be the feature back. It's still up for grabs who's going to be that number two back.
Sure. But what I was going to ask is who's the second hit? Is it Elijah Green? Is it Josh Henderson?
I think it's going to be Caleb Hood.
Caleb Hood?
Off of from what I've heard from people.
Okay.
So Caleb Hood, true freshman running back. He's a bigger
body. That changes
your
pass pro.
Yeah, he's a bigger body. Pass protection is kind of the last thing that clicks for that high school.
Exactly.
That high school to college jump off. But he has a bigger frame. I would say he's closer to like a Javonte than he would be like a Michael Carter. But if you want me to give like where I'm the most concerned about this team, it's got to be the skill positions on offense. You're replacing four players who have put up monster 1,000-plus-yard seasons in Michael Carter, Javonte Williams, Daz Newsome, Deami Brown. I think Sam Howell has the talent to make a good receiver great and an average receiver good. Finding where you're going to get 4,000 or so yards,
that
becomes a challenge, I think, because, and it's also a challenge for those incoming guys. Like, I know Ty Chandler was asked about it, like, you know, how do you replace Javonte or Michael Carter? And those are questions he's going to hear the entire year until he starts, until, you know, production starts to match. Yeah. So I think that's kind of in the back of everybody's head. Like, how are we going to replace these guys? And at the same time, you're trying to fight it off and saying like, you know, I'm trying to be the best Ty Chandler I could be. I'm not trying to be Michael Carter, Javonte Williams, but until you see production from the skill positions, I think that has to be the biggest concern or the biggest worry for this team. Just because you know you have somebody as talented as Sam Howell, and the window to win with Sam Howell, it's this year. That's it.
2021. No, that's the reason why I wanted to kind of flip it back on you, because Ty Chandler, I trust him in pass protection. He understands what it is, and sometimes you've got to sacrifice your body. I don't know who's next up on that list to do that. And when I think about it from a football standpoint, I think of everything from a defensive standpoint, right? And if I recognize that you have one guy that can pass protect, okay. When he's in the game, I know what you're doing. Or when I recognize you have one guy that cannot pass protect, but is your best running back, if he's out of the game, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And to highlight that, I think about Clemson with Travis Etienne. Awful at pass protection. So they would put in what's his name that ended Tavian Feaster. They put Feaster in the game, and Feaster would go in the game whenever they wanted to throw the football because Travis Etienne couldn't pass protect. Okay. No, I know what you're doing now. So I think that's because, but the problem is you think about the dominoes that fall with that. if I know that you're going to pull, and what was his name again? The freshman?
Caleb Hood.
Caleb Hood. So if I know that when Caleb Hood's in the game, he's going to get the football defensively, okay, I'm keying on that. And then I know they take him out, whether it's Chandler or it's Green or it's Henderson or it's British or Brooks or whoever, those guys go in to do pass protection. Okay, now I'm looking for pass, which means maybe we dial up a blitz. Maybe we key up this. And now to get the ball to Corrales down the field, it's a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the dominoes that I think about when I think about football. Those are the things that fall down because everything leads to another thing. And I don't know that a lot of people think about football that way, but that's the way that I think about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just – for me, I do think that that pass protection is going to be critical. You got a quarterback that's as good as Sam Howell. You want to show him off.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't protect him or you can only protect him with specific people, then you don't get to show him off because yeah. Everybody's going to key on that. So I think that's the part that I would be very curious to see.
Yeah, and I wouldn't so much say that I'm worried about UNC's skilled positions, but if I had to pick an area of like where sure. I think this team needs to catch up to where the rest of the team is at, that's where I would pick. But I think
it's a team that has two deep wise 3-year players
yeah
along the offensive line.
Yeah,
those guys have played a lot of football together.
Yeah,
they're gonna get it. The wide receiving group, this is one thing I think about football, Taylor. This is a thing I've thought about football for a long time. You can have old wide receivers and a young quarterback and make it work. You can have an older quarterback and young wide receivers and make it work. You cannot have young wide receivers and a young quarterback.
Yeah.
And UNC is in the lucky position to have, obviously, Corrales is an older wide receiver, but the rest of these guys are young wide receivers, but with an experienced quarterback. So they should be able to make it work. The only thing that won't make it work, problems with him getting the ball out.
Yeah. And I want to say too, while I would say my biggest concern with this team is the skill positions, it also kind of coincides with the fact that I don't think this team has to put up 41.7 points per game, or they don't have to put up 537 yards per game like they did last year, because I think the defense is ready to take that next step where you have that continuity. You have the influx of the true freshmen last year, Tony Grimes, Jaquarius mm-hmm. Conley, Miles Murphy, to where they're in year two, and you have guys like Eugene Asante, you have guys like Jeremiah Gimmel, the Fox brothers, Geo Biggers at the other safety spot, where you're seeing a Jay Bateman starting to put together a defense. So defensively, what would you say you want to see week one against Virginia Tech to be like, okay, this unit might be for real?
I want to say I want to say four sacks, and not four sacks that come because somebody's unblocked, but four sacks that come because somebody is working. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I want to see four earned sacks. I want to see like Rashard Weaver, Jalen Twyman sacks, not like unblocked corner blitz sacks.
Yeah.
I want to see that. That's what I want to see. I'll kick it back to you. What did they give up? 30 points a game a year ago?
Yeah.
29 points a game.
Yeah.
What's the number? What's the number for you that makes this North Carolina team a 10-win, 11-win football team that is playing in the ACC championship game? What's the number defensively that you want to see? Is it 17? Is it 22? Because you mentioned they don't have to score 45 points a game.
Yeah.
But what's the number defensively that makes that real?
I think one thing with those numbers, I think they're going to be like a mid-20s. I think mid-20s can get it done, be a 10-win team.
I agree.
And
because they'll be capable offensively of scoring in the 30s into the 40s.
Yeah.
And they have an offensive coordinator that wants to do that, which is different from places like Georgia.
Yeah, and last year it was basically just an ACC schedule, so those numbers are a little higher. I think they probably would have been a high 20s last mm-hmm. year. But I think with everybody taking that kind of step forward, you should be in that like mid 20s range. And like you mentioned, Phil Longo, they're going to want to run it up. Sam Howell, he's going to be in the middle of all that Heisman talk. You know, Mac Brown is going to want to help out Sam Howell, yes, try to get to New York as best as he can. So if North Carolina can run up some of these games, North Carolina, they will run up some of these games.
Yeah. I think that's critical to look at. I think that the world of college football is changing from an officiating standpoint, from where you put your talent, and scoring is imperative. You have to score. But also, if you're like let's think about it realistically, right? We've lived a life, like, and I'm older than you, but we've lived a life where we saw the best defenses in the country that gave up like 9 points a game.
Yeah.
That's not real. Like, that's not real anymore. And no. I don't know who's listening to this, but I tell you what, we're about to see an SEC revert back to we're a defensive conference this season, where they tout their defenses because the quarterbacks are all going to suck.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting to watch that. But the reality of it all is, man, and TV, I might not been calling you TV the whole time. Come on. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Come on, TV. Don't watch me, watch TV. But no, I think what we're going to be dealing with is, you look at the schedule and what we've got. Obviously, UNC has Virginia Tech to kick off the season.
Georgia State.
Okay, yeah, take care of business. Take care of business. Virginia is going to be interesting. Virginia is a team that doesn't beat yourself, so you have to win that football game.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech, that's another interesting game. I'm very curious to see if Georgia Tech lets Jordan Yates get that football a little bit, because I really love that kid. I think he's really good. Duke is going to be interesting. Just because, again, another team that doesn't beat themselves, Florida State. I think they're going to be really bad, to be quite honest. Miami, I don't know what to expect out of Miami. I have no idea. Notre Dame is going to be a tough one, especially because you play Notre Dame at the end of October, 2 months into the season. They will know who their quarterback is, whether it's Jack Cohn or it's Drew Pine. We'll see what happens there. Wake Forest, go beat Wake Forest. Pitt is always a tough out because Pitt does so many weird things. I was talking to Jordan Reed, actually, and we were talking about kind of I want to ask a question. What did you guys call the amoeba defense, like the spinner orbit defense? What did you guys call that, where the defensive line never really lined up? They just kind of linebackers and everyone just kind of moved all around. What did you guys call that?
I think in the receiver room, we called it kind of like a floating defense.
Floating.
Where you just never knew.
Pitt does that, and they're good at it. So we'll see what happens, although they lost some big pieces. And then obviously Wofford and then NC State. So this is going to be – and NC State's got Drew Leary back, and Leary is really, really good. I love Drew Leary a ton. Like, I know that in theory, when we talk – what do we talk – when we talk ACC quarterbacks, it's what? It's DJ Uiagalelei is everyone's infatuation. Sam Howell is the guy that we know.
Derek King,
and then Drew, and then it's Devin Leary and Kenny Pickett, right?
Mm.
So this is going to be interesting. But for me, I look at the schedule, and obviously, like, you gotta go out and make wins. The biggest thing I think about, and the reason I brought up the points thing, is UNC is a team that is, as we see wide receivers start to emerge when we get into the season and see guys that are able to make plays down the field as we get into the season and discover what we get from that running back spot as they get into the season, UNC is a team that is comfortable. You don't want to do it, but you're comfortable scoring 35 to 45 points.
Yeah.
And that's a good place to be in.
Yeah.
In modern college football. And UNC is also a team, and especially with a guy like Sam Howell, who's a really smart kid who knows what he's doing, doing the thing that I hate the most about college football, which is playing the defensive pass interference. But he'll do it. We've seen him do it, right?
Yeah.
We've seen him drop a back shoulder when the better throw should be out in front, but he throws it behind, and next thing you know, the defensive back runs over that wide receiver. Now we've got a free 15 yards. Let's play another day. Mm-hmm. Fresh set of downs. We've seen him do it. And so I think that bodes well for North Carolina. I think that bodes well for the Tar Heels in terms of what they're going to be able to do, how they're going to be able to kind of right themselves out of trouble. And even if you start out slow, which was something, was that a year? That was last year, right? They start out slow against what, Syracuse?
Yeah, yeah.
You start out slow, but then you know what? If you can steal a penalty here to grab a first down that you probably shouldn't get, it helps you get on track to be able to win football games. And I think that's what having a quarterback who's a little more aged in the game. And it's weird to call someone who's only, what, a junior. Aged. Yeah. But that's the reality of college football now, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of mentioned earlier, like, a lot of people are picking North Carolina as like this sleeper team for the playoffs, or a team that everybody's kind of penciling in right now to at least be in the ACC championship mm-hmm. against Clemson. And I think the elephant in the room when you're talking about Carolina football is that Carolina would be a more popular pick if you don't have the losses to the 4-5 Virginias, the 3-6 Florida States, even in the best of years, like 2015, where we lost to South Carolina, a South Carolina team that finished like 3-10. How does this team eliminate those games where you're left looking around like, what just happened? What team was that we just sent out there?
Yeah, I think it's a focus thing. It's focus and recognizing that we can lose. Like you played, right? You've been there when you've been on the sidelines when it's like, oh wait, what? We're losing?
Can we restart this game?
It sucks. It's like, wait, what did we do all week? And then this is what happened? And I think that's the fickle nature of dealing with people that are 17 to 22. Mm. And I don't think it's a UNC issue. I think it is. I mean, we've seen Ohio State get smashed out by Purdue. What? Huh? Where'd that come from? We've seen Oregon lose to Utah or watching Washington lose to Washington State. And you're just like, hey man, how's this happening?
Yeah.
I think it's just the fickle nature of college football. I think that's part of the sport that I identify with a lot. I mean, it's like, you don't know that guy, maybe his girlfriend dumped him that weekend and he's just not focused. And that's the reality though, right? Like it's hard.
Yeah. I think part of it is like, when you're in that locker room and you have a number attached to your team, like Carolina is the seventh best team in the country and eighth best team in the country, you almost forget that the team across from you is going to go out and give you their best shot. Like you might've seen,
and they lift weights too.
Yeah. You might've seen like Florida State the week before look absolutely terrible. Like a team mm-hmm. that doesn't Garbage. Know what they're doing. But, you know, when you go into Tallahassee and all of a sudden they're hearing that the number five team is coming in and it's a team like North Carolina with as big mm-hmm. a national brand as North Carolina. And you start thinking like, oh, if I'm Florida State and we win this game, we might be the lead of SportsCenter. We might be the talk of the town. I think that's something that kind of gets lost on.
Yeah.
In that locker room. Do you feel that way kind of?
Yeah. Well, listen, for my entire career at UNC, we were the other team.
Yeah.
Like we were the other team. We were always the other team. We were the team that was not ranked that could, like when we beat Miami in 2004, Miami walked in and they're like, oh, we're about to stomp these dudes out. And then what happens? We play a really good football game and we get a really great kick, obviously, from Connor Barth, and we get a huge win. And it felt great for us. But other side of that coin, we felt really good about ourselves, and then we went and played Virginia Tech and they beat us 33-3. So it's one of those things where, again, I think it speaks to the fickle mental nature of being that old and how you handle things. And I think you're spot on with when you put a number next to your name that you think that automatically assumes you're good. I think that's something that Nick Saban's been amazing about, is letting his kids know that the number doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And Dabo's doing it as well. And I think obviously Mac has the capability of doing that. And we'll see what happens with Ohio State or any of these other schools. But the reality of it is that you better go out and play every week. Because if you don't play every week like your hair's on fire, somebody's going to show out and really put you out. Yeah. And that's the rough part. And that's why I brought up Ohio State losing to Purdue. Excuse me, losing to Purdue, because it's hard. And it's hard every week, and every week is different. And you know what it – man, you've been in the locker room. You know what life is like. Like, it's – like, you don't know. Like, everybody's – it could be school, and you got to get – you got this test going on, or you got to do this or that or this responsibility. You're not as focused as you might maybe should have been, or obviously dealing with, you know, significant others and all this stuff. Like, there's a lot of variables, and it's different than being in the NFL.
Yeah.
In the NFL, like, that's your job. You're focused.
The only thing you have to worry about.
It's just very, yeah, it's different. But yeah, no, I think that, I think you're spot on. I think having a number attached to your name does make people feel like you start to feel yourself. And one of the biggest things, and I don't know if any of the players are going to listen to this or not, but, and we're at the end now, but don't feel yourself. Just stick to your craft. The craft is what gets the job done. The craft is what pays the bills. The craft is what gets you to the next level. The craft is what gets you those dubs. The craft is what gets you all the stuff that you want in life. It's the craft is what gets it to you. And I don't know, for me, even as someone who works in media, like, I think about the craft more than I think about anything else. Like, I'm not a star. What's what Rick Ross say? I'm not a star. Somebody lied.
Yeah.
That's it. Show up, bang it out. Work as hard as you can. And for UNC, that work as hard as you can means every week, know that I don't care. And we see coaches do it all the time, right? Pretend that they're the underdog.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. You've got to show up and realize I don't know how many people have seen the program. Now I'm dating myself even more, I guess. But if you've seen the program, like, Alvin Mack is the linebacker in the movie The Program. And in that movie, he does a thing where he is like, you were talking about my mom. Like, he just manufactured a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of just how you can help yourself stay focused. I don't mean to rant and ramble for that long. But
yeah, I also think when you're talking about the team kind of reading their own press clippings, the fact that they have 21 of 22 starters back from an Orange Bowl. They have a lot of experience back to be like, you know, we remember when we came in highly ranked to Florida State and we took them maybe a lot more lightly than we kind of expected. Yep. And we remember how embarrassing it was to get back on that plane back to Chapel Hill where, you know, we come into that game a double digit favorite and everybody was talking about us to now everybody questioning us. I think the fact that they have so much experience back and they have somebody like Mac Brown kind of riding the ship, I think that will help them this year. And that's one of the things I'm looking forward to seeing. But switching sides, you know, you're from Charlotte. You're from the Charlotte area. You're somebody that follows.
I'm from Charlotte. I'm not from the Charlotte area. Like, Charlotte area is Belmont, Gastonia. I'm from Charlotte.
You're from Charlotte. And you're also somebody that follows and understands the ins and outs of recruiting. How would you begin to describe the importance of Mac Brown building this wall around in-state talent and repairing any high school relationships to where the class of 2021 was the 14th best class in the nation? And you also have 11 of the top 12 guys from the state of North Carolina.
I mean, I think it's huge. UNC has not always done well in Charlotte, period. Like, we got Tennessee has done better than UNC in Charlotte. Obviously, Florida has done better. Like, we see guys leave consistently. And to be able to – I think that's – to honestly, I think that's maybe one of Dre Bly's biggest contributions is having the relationships not just with players but with coaches. And I remember when Kenny Browning was let go, I thought that was a disaster for UNC. And then seeing, I mean, listen, Drake May is not playing there if Dre Bly is not on that staff. That's a reality, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's not playing there. And to see them go out and get, I mean, Power Eccles is another one. Like, that's, he's going to Tennessee or he's going to Georgia. And that's a reality of the situation. But to be able to get those guys and to keep them in state and to keep these guys at home is huge. to be able to recruit. And obviously, like, Gavin Blackwell is at UNC. Why? Because UNC was also able to get Sam Howell from his same high school. Like, that's all these, there's the connective tissue in all of this. And I think it matters. And it's, I don't know, recruiting is a thing that I really, I love. And listen, getting the kid, what is it? Kamaru Edmonds from Havelock. Havelock is, for those of you that don't know, I think probably one of my favorite places to, I've been to a couple of coaches clinics where Havelock coaches have been talking, and they understand they don't have the biggest kids in the world, or they don't have the strongest kids or the fastest kids all the time, but they play this chaotic brand of football, going back to that 3-3-5. They play this chaotic brand of football that is devastating to other teams, because if they start teaching it when these kids are in like eighth grade, they start building them all the way up through that. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's, I've never seen UNC recruit like this, to be quite honest. I've never seen UNC recruit like this. Even when Mack Brown was there the first time, UNC didn't recruit like this always in state.
Yeah,
sure. Like, they did a really good job in the Tidewater area, like Chesapeake down to Virginia Beach, Norfolk area. They did a great job there, but this is in-state stuff. And I do think that, obviously, I think there are a couple things at play here. I think one is with less travel due to, obviously, COVID, kids are wanting to stay home. They recognize the value of being closer to their families. I also think that with Tennessee being bad and Virginia Tech not being very good, UNC is capitalizing on these opportunities, which I think is a big positive. I don't think it's, I think, yeah, go for it. Because if in this small window space and time, UNC is able to create a winning brand, then they're going to get more of those kids. And those kids' teammates are going to continue to go to school there. So I think Dre Bly is just a remarkable ambassador for the program. I think Mack Brown, obviously, as the figurehead at the top, is important because these high school coaches like to talk to him, and they like to know that he cares about them, and they like to know that their players have value to him.
Yeah.
And that was not something that we always saw in previous regimes.
Yeah. I also think that if North Carolina can keep recruiting at this level, where I think nobody really saw this kind of level recruiting for North Carolina coming, I think Mack Brown and the program that he's kind of rebuilt at Carolina, it's a program where they're going to play exceeding their recruiting rankings with that development and with the schemes that they're kind of putting everybody in. So it's like, if he could keep this ball rolling and keep this momentum going, it's why everybody starts to talk about, like, what's the potential of this North Carolina program, because it's not something anybody in this lifetime has ever seen. But that's all I have for you football related wise. Like I mentioned earlier, UNC fans, you have to follow Michael Felder on Twitter at In the Bleachers, where you can get a mix of all things. He's an expert on football, gardening, cooking. To get off topic for a second as we close, I just started cooking, moved to this new apartment. Just started cooking on my own. I started one of those meal prep services. Not going to mention any names. Don't want to give any free ads away. So to close, I'm wondering, what's the best tips you have for a beginner like myself in the kitchen?
So my best tip, I'll say this. Do you like chicken?
Yeah.
Okay. So depending on what's on sale that week, you can get a whole chicken. You can get split breast. You can get chicken thighs. You can get wings. I say at least twice a week, you got to figure out roasting chicken in the oven.
Okay.
Take the time. You'll learn your oven. You're also going to learn the technique to what works best for you, whether it's spatchcocking the chicken or cutting the chicken into halves or what have you. And the other thing I'll say is, do you have a thermometer?
Yes, I do.
You got a thermometer?
Yeah.
Use it. That's the biggest key. Too many people who don't cook a lot don't use thermometers, and they just use the times on the recipe.
Uh-huh.
But everyone's oven is different, and the thermometer is going to give you the true temperature.
Okay.
There. Boom. I mean, listen, I've been cooking for a long time. I am 53 chickens into smoking chickens this year because I wanted to get better at it. I've smoked chickens for over a decade, but I wanted to get really good at what I like and knowing what I do like and what I don't like about them. And so I'm that deep into it. I spent a year roasting chickens. That's why I start with roasting chickens, because it's such an easy meal. You, friends, whoever, like, it looks super impressive when you roast the whole chicken.
Yeah.
But it's so, like, if once you practice enough, it's going to be easy. You don't have to think about it anymore. And then you don't have to go out to eat or order something.
I'll keep that in mind, UNC fans. See what I'm talking about. You can't get that kind of insight anywhere else. That's all I have for you today, Felder. Appreciate your time as always. And we'll have to do this again sometime soon. And I'm going to send you pictures of some of the meals I cook. Get your tips. I'm a big plating and lighting guy.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Your lighting's probably better than mine, but I am, I'm very close to springing for a DSLR just to take food pics.
Appreciate it always.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sampfel, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.